Bye, everybody. This was made for short people. And this is the tape side. All right. Okay. Wow. My name's Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. And when I came to AA in New York City, my first meeting, I had no idea that it was going to start on a life of not drinking. I was 20 years old at the time, and I was having a lot of trouble with my drinking, and my aunt had heard that I was having trouble and called me up and asked me if I would want to go to a meeting. This was about a few days before New Year's. So I agreed to go, and on the way into New York City, my parents had moved to Long Island by then, and on the way in, I drank a six-pack to the meeting, and little was I to know that that was the last drink I'd ever have. So whatever you think is going to happen when you wake up in the morning, don't count on it, because it was probably the last thing that I ever thought was that I was going to be introduced to a way of life that was going to make me whole. This is the first time that I think I've ever spoken where I made notes. Michelle said I had to speak for an hour, and I can't imagine anyone having that much to say in 1 hour. The last time I spoke, two times ago, the first thing people wanted to know is, after they found out how long I was sober, was, how old am I? I want to know how old I was. I'm 43, and I have to wear glasses now if I'm going to read. And that just tells you that I'm getting old. I have all these nice things to talk about, but basically throughout the next hour, I'd like to talk about being a success and what each one of us deems as what success is. So just try to remember that as I talk about my story and about some of the things that I've experienced, because one of the things that I never expected was to be a success. I never had any goals in life that were that specific that I was going through life saying, this is what I want out of life, and if I get it, I will be a success. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I found that the AA way of life has taught me that success comes in a whole lot of different ways, and I didn't expect them to be in the ways that it happened. First of all, I'd like to talk a little bit about my story. It's a pretty typical story for someone who grew up in New York City and who's Irish Catholic. You grow up. 3, 4, 5. The first recollections I had were being in an Irish bar. My father played football during his 20s, semi-pro. I remember fights. I remember fights on the football field, fights on the street corner, fights in the bars, fights in the family. There was a lot of violence. I didn't turn out to be a very violent person. In fact, I tried to avoid fighting, and I think a lot of it was caused by watching my mother get hit with an iron, get hit with whatever. I'm the oldest of six children, which is not too untypical of an Irish family. My mother was German Lutheran, and maybe that side of my heritage kept me sane. I don't know. I just know that for some reason there's a duality about me where in many cases I'm ruled by this crazy Irish lifestyle that I love, And there's this German Lutheran side of me that wants to work 16 hours a day. And I didn't know about that until I turned 30, though. It's kind of strange. But I grew up in a household where education was a premium. We had no money. We grew up in the projects in Queens, and we went to some of the best schools in New York City. The best public schools in New York City were in our neighborhood. I had a quality education. I went to Catholic school in the ninth grade because I think for a few reasons. I think my father wanted me to keep me away from women. He knew I would get in trouble. And he was a believer in a classical education, Greek, Latin, whatever, Shakespeare, Milton. And so for 4 years I went to a Catholic school in Brooklyn, and it was very naive, very romantic, very horny. They kept the women away from me, and when I turned 15, I was a sophomore, I started to drink, and I drank in a graveyard, and I drank 3 quarts of Ballantine beer, and I got drunk, and I loved it, and from there on, I realized why everyone in my family drank. It was quite evident that it was the key to going through life without having to deal with people. And so one of the things that I found in alcohol was oblivion. And that's what I sought every time I drank. I sought the oblivion to not feel the loneliness of growing up. And then later on, realizing that it wasn't just the loneliness of growing up, it was the loneliness of being a human being. Because I think that one of the things that separates us from animals and lower forms is the fact that we are conscious of our loneliness. We are the only living thing that is conscious of the fact that we have to go through life alone. Despite the fact that we grab on to friends, lovers, parents, children, and try to fill that void, the fact is, every waking moment we are alone. And for me, the only answer was alcohol. That was my solution to the loneliness. Now, I was a kind of a popular guy too. I had everything on the surface that you might think one could have. I had lots of friends. I was a star on the basketball team, the tennis team, the baseball team. I had all of that, but those didn't seem to do anything for what was missing inside, and I filled it with drinking. I did this from 15 to 20, and what I found in the last year was that I would get a paycheck. And you know, most people, they get a paycheck and they think about paying the rent and they think about doing this and think about doing that. My first idea with the paycheck was, well, how much can I drink with it? And this is at 19. This is what I thought about having a paycheck. I put myself through college. My parents wanted me to have an education, but they didn't have the money to pay. So they said, well, you better go to college, but we can't give you any money. And so I got a job as a bartender on the Long Island Railroad. And I worked the bar cars going out to Montauk and the Hamptons and met all the beautiful people. It was fun because I could drink and I could do whatever they had to do. My best friend and I despite the fact that we had, again, everything on the outside going for us, we were reading at that time, and this is 1965, 66, 67, I was introduced to Naked Lunch by Burroughs and On the Road by Kerouac, and I lived the life of a hipster and a beatnik. I thought of myself as a Brendan Behan type, sitting in the bar, drinking away, writing poetry, killing myself. Seemed to be the life. It was very romantic. I was going to college, and I was doing sort of okay. You know, I was the type of student who would get 90s one semester and 70s the next. I was so erratic. My parents during high school had to literally not let me out of the house for 6 to 9 months because my behavior was so wild when I did do well and they let me out that I immediately went. I went to more special classes and back than any student in school. One semester I would be in the bright class, and the next semester I'd be in the class with all the tough kids. So no one ever knew what I was like. I was always hanging around with the wrong element. And little did they know that I was the wrong element. I was the one who was always looking to get in trouble. We talk about what did you do on Friday night, and they would talk about throwing snowballs at cars and stuff, and I said, oh no. You use light bulbs, you know. Have you, you know, you hit a car with a light bulb at night, and they don't know what the hell happened. But that's what we considered fun. You know, I told you I wasn't a tough guy, but I was the fastest kid in Queens. No one ever caught me. No one. So that's kind of. My life when I grew up, I was just the kid who always got drunk at the party. I was the kid who was always drinking. People would say, stay away from McLaren. He's just going to get you into trouble. And then one day out of the blue, I tried to stop drinking and, I was drinking. I had jumped through a plate glass window. I had been told that I was going to be flunking out of college. Things were really going downhill. I was drinking every night in the dorm, and I tried to stop. And I stopped for 10 days. And at the 10th day, I don't know what happened. I was in a bar, and the idea came over me, why would you want to stop when you know you're going to drink again? You know that it's inevitable. You look at your family, you look at your life, there's just no way that you can stop drinking. So you might as well drink. You might as well realize that your life is going to be one of, you know, you're going to either die by the age of 25, or you're going to get married, have a couple of kids, beat the wife, beat the kids, live the life of your father. And I accepted all of that. I made a decision in that bar that night that if that's what was going to happen, that if I died by 25, that would be okay. If I lived the life of my father, that would be okay. I was resigned to killing myself. And I just remember the despair that came over me at that moment. You've all experienced it, of course, because you're here. Because I don't think that you can get sober without having to come to that point of despair. Because it takes something that great to force yourself to look at yourself and say, you know, what am I doing with my life? It was at that moment that I didn't think there was any hope for this person. A month later, my aunt calls. She was I don't know, she was in her early 30s and a year sober. And the year before, I had blacked out at New Year's with her and her brother, and she knew I had a problem, and I guess she just decided to call me up. So I went to this meeting, and there was about 300 people in the meeting, and these three people talked about alcohol, and I didn't understand. And a guy comes up to me, and he says, "Oh, you must be a McLaren. We're in AA, you know." I thought this was anonymous. And I said, "How do you know that?" And he says, "Oh, you look like one." So I couldn't find my aunt. She wasn't there. She came in 5 minutes before the end of the meeting. And off we went to these AA parties in Manhattan. One was on the west side, and the host offered everybody non-alcoholic wine, which I thought was in very bad taste. You know, why would you want to tempt people? You know, I never drank wine except Gallo and Gypsy. Remember, my upbringing wasn't the best, and so I've never had things like pina coladas or margaritas or any of those fancy drinks. The closest I got to martini was straight vodka for a toothache. I had a toothache, so I take vodka. I met a guy that night. The second party was on the west side, and it was my kind of people. Lower middle class Irish. And a fella came up to me and started talking to me and asked me if I had a trouble with drinking, and I said I did, but I didn't understand. You know, I had heard people talking about being alcoholic, and I didn't know what alcoholic meant. And he said, "Do you think you're an alcoholic?" I said, "I don't even know what an alcoholic is. I just know that I drink a lot." And he looked me in the eye and he said, "Well, I'm an alcoholic, and I've been sober 5 years, and my life is great. And if you think that you have a problem, maybe it's time that you stop drinking for a while and see if this thing works." And that's how I got into AA. That night, we stayed up all night. I went home the next day, and I thought about what this man had said. Somewhere in the next 2 or 3 days, I just made a decision to give AA a chance. I didn't really think I was an alcoholic. I didn't know. The one emotion that I can remember at that time was that I was very confused about who I was. And I think the emotion of confusion was the predominant feeling that I had at that time. I felt like an outsider everywhere I went. I never belonged to a group. The closest thing that I could join was a basketball game. I liked individual sports more than team sports. I didn't belong to any clubs. People asked me to join AA, and I said, "Why would I want to join something?" And then they said there was no dues or fees. And I didn't have any money, so it was okay. Someone gave me a big book. Now, if anyone's having trouble understanding me, we're going to have an interpreter later go through the tape. I went to a meeting once in the Bronx, and I was with someone, and after the meeting, they said, "Well, what did they say?" Because sometimes my inflections are tough to understand. I'm going to try to be more succinct in what I say, but you'll have to bear with me. My upbringing sometimes get in the way. I've completed the first third, and that's my story. Of getting into AA. one of the things that I wanted to talk about was being different and how I felt when I first came in and how separate I felt, especially at that time. I was 20 years old, and I think the nearest person in age from me was somewhere between 12 and 15 years. And so I looked around, you know, and I said, the thing that's going to distinguish me from everyone else, of course, is my age. And I guess, they told me to identify, not compare. They told me that an alcoholic is an alcoholic, doesn't have anything to do with gender or race or anything. So why don't I just go to meetings and relax, and maybe I was an alcoholic. And if I didn't want what they had, I could go out and drink again. And I thought that was pretty fair. You know, that was real fair. They didn't know how to handle me. You know, the ladies who were 65 and over, they used to come up to me and say, "Oh, you're so lucky. You're just so lucky to be here in AA." And I look at them and say, "What the hell do I want to be here for? It's Saturday night. You know, I want to be out there. Even if I wasn't drinking, I wanted to be somewhere other than an AA meeting." And for the life of me, I couldn't understand social AA. You know, I could understand going to a meeting and get your head together. I couldn't understand why you would want to go there and fraternize with these people who had nothing in common with me other than the fact that they drank too much at one time. But their wives and their husbands, I didn't want to be with them. So I kept asking myself why I was in AA, I guess. But I knew why I was there. I was hurting, and I was hurting bad. And these were the only people that knew what I was going through. And I was going through the shakes. And, you know, after about 3 weeks of not sleeping, I had to remember that normal people, when they stop drinking, don't go through the shakes for 3 weeks. So maybe I was an alcoholic. It was the little things like that, you know. The fact that I could identify with what the people said at the meetings. I don't know if anyone used to sit like this, you know, with your hands underneath, so that when if someone asks you to shake your hands, they'd be dry. Then you get up and there's a little spot right in the back. That used to happen to me all the time. I was at a meeting, I think, not 2 weeks in the program, and this old sucker gets up and he says, "I'm a real alcoholic. And I've had 3 DWIs, and I've been in jail." And I'm going, "Well, that ain't me. That ain't me." And this big guy gets up, and he's like 6'4", and he's 230 pounds. And he says, "I'm a real alcoholic." And he goes on. And little did I know that he was just funning. And that was my sponsor to be. But what he recognized was is that I was looking for an out, and he wasn't going to let me get away. And so after the meeting, he walked up to me and he told me that his name was Paul, and that not to listen to these old fuckers anyway. He said. Now, when I talk about my story and I talk about my program, I would like to make reference to a few things. One, I have a real difficult time with a lot of the jargon of today. And maybe it's because of the time that I was introduced to AA. There weren't very many halfway houses. There weren't very many psychoanalysis, psychiatrists, programs, institutions. At the time, the closest thing they had was the VA hospital. And when you went through the door, it clanked. And so a lot of the jargon today of codependency and those things are very foreign to me. And I have to apologize because I can't speak very, very much about those kind of things. I was brought up in this program to believe a few things, and one of it is you just don't drink today. And the other thing is that you go to meetings, and the other thing is that you read the big book. And that's the way I got sober. That's my experience. For a long time, I didn't understand a lot of what was going on in AA. And I got very angry because I found people going to these psychologists, psychiatrists, and bringing back some of that jargon into the meetings and bringing back a lot of the concepts. And I didn't understand it, and I got very confused. And I've had a struggle with that. Today, I understand that there's a lot of ways to stay sober and get sober, and it's not necessarily the way that I did it. But for a long time, I had a lot of difficulties with understanding how other people got sober in the present. So you'll have to bear with me because the message that I have is more like the crotchety old timer who says, "Well, you just don't drink, you know. I don't want to hear your shit. Just don't drink, you know." And he sits in the back of the clubhouse and he's smoking a cigarette and drinking his coffee, and, you know. So, but there's a lot of what he says is in me, and I have to realize that. That when people ask me how did I get sober, I just don't drink. I wake up in the morning and I just don't drink. I called my sponsor up once. I was sober like 7 months. I was living on the east side of New York. I had an apartment. And I called him up and I was giving him, you know, the sob story of my day. I'm having a bad day. And I went on and on for 5 minutes and he said, "Did you drink today?" And I said, "Nope." He says, "Oh, you're having a successful day, I see." There's not much you can say after that. There's really not much, because the guy was right. You know, you can sing the blues all day. You can talk about your troubles. But the fact was that I hadn't had a drink that day. And that made it a successful day. And if you think of your day is a successful day because you don't pick up a drink, you got a leg up. And that's the way I look at it. Because I came into the program at such a young age, I don't know. I had sponsors who never told me what to do. They knew that if they told me, I wouldn't listen anyway. Maybe it's the curse of the generational gap. But they always suggested, you know, they read the promises here before the meeting. I never heard the promises until I was sober 15 years. Believe me. I mean, I must have read them, but I never knew there was any promises. All I wanted was to be sober. I never wanted anything more than that. And everything that I've gotten from AA has been gravy. And it's kind of nice to go through life not expecting anything. Now when I hear the promises, I wonder whether or not it's a good thing to spend so much time. Although it is a lot of hope when you're in despair. The fact is, most of the things that I never thought I would have when I got them, they were a surprise. Oh, I never thought I'd get that. And then I didn't want it when I got it. You know, like the job. It's a lot of money. I got all those things. I was sober a little less than 2 years, and I got drafted in the Army. And Vietnam was going on. And I couldn't imagine going into the Army and staying sober. But, you know, there were no meetings in the Army. But, you know, the fellowship still is there. Talk about fellowship. A lot of people nowadays talk about fellowship as like a social thing. You know, there's a social club, and they go down to the meetings, and this, and the fellowship keeps me sober, you know. I always thought it was the intimacy between two alcoholics which was fellowship. I never wanted to hang around with other AA people. Believe me. You wouldn't have wanted to either. They just weren't my, you know, I don't hang around with people 35. They were old. So, there I was. And I think I looked at AA also as a, AA was to teach me how to live out in the world. You know, if it wasn't to teach me how to live in AA. Granted, we try out things within AA, and we learn how to act by acting within AA. You know, we develop friendships. We learn how to cry. We learn how to laugh. We learn how to be friends within AA. But eventually, we have to go out in the world. And we have to get a job, and we have to interact with those people. And we can't have temper tantrums at work. Yeah. Get rid of them. Oh, but I'm an alcoholic. Big deal. You know? People out there don't care. People in here care, but they can't help you when you're out there. So, I can't remember when I had... I'll tell you, my first friends in AA were 2 years ago. And I've been sober 22 years. I just didn't have friends. I had sponsors. I had people I went to meetings with. But I didn't have friends. Now, there's a lot of bad to that. Because I missed an awful lot. And there's part of my story that after I got sober that's not so great. Because I isolated and I left the program because I couldn't handle being that different. I was able to handle being different early because I wanted to stay sober so bad that that I'd do anything. I even believed in God. Believe me. For 2 years I believed in God because someone said to me, if you believe in God, it's easy to stay sober. And I didn't believe in God, so I said, well, I guess I want to stay sober bad enough, so that's what I did. So all during the time I was in the Army, I believed in God. Not such a bad thing, but... that's, you know, that's the lens that I went to get sober. I feel that this God thing was probably one of the most difficult things that I had to face. I've always been very spiritual, and I grew up reading philosophy at 14, but I never could understand why anyone would believe in God. And to this day, I still do not believe in the deity. I believe very strongly in a higher power. But one thing that's great about this program is that no one said I had to believe in God. And no one said I had to do it their way. And I'm grateful for the fact that I can be different and that I can have my program and I can be sober today and not have someone tell me that my program stinks because I don't believe in a deity. And I've never heard anyone say that to me. So for anyone who's new today and who looks at the 12 steps and sees all the references to a higher power and God, please, please do not be discouraged. Because when I came into AA, the first thing that I thought was, how am I going to get through all of that? How am I going to get through the insanity of my life and still try to believe in this God stuff? But whatever it takes to stay sober today, do it. So I'm a very practical person. That's the other side of me. I'm very philosophical on one side, but I'm also very practical. And AA is a very, very practical program. On the one hand, it gives you 12 steps, which is a philosophical way of going through life. On the other hand, it teaches some very tangible things about how to stay away from a drink one day at a time. One day at a time. Boy, what a concept. And then to learn that the rest of the steps in the rest of your life, if they live one day at a time, they work. And the fact is that the confidence that not drinking one day at a time gave me to try out other things one day at a time, the fact that I even wrote this out is a miracle, because I live a day at a time. I very rarely ever think about tomorrow, except to make sure that I take care of things today so that tomorrow is taken care of. And that's my concept of one day at a time. Is you better be doing what you're supposed to be doing today. And if you do those things, tomorrow will take care of itself. You don't have to worry about it. So, how can you go through 2 years of the Army and stay sober? I don't know. But you can do it. I went to Germany, and there wasn't any meeting, so I went to a German meeting. I didn't understand a word they said. And then he said Autobahn. I knew they had an accident. And I said, oh, I had an accident. Of course, if you come from New York City, you don't drive. So, but they gave me a license, and I have to tell you this story. They gave me a license. They put me in a truck, and they said, okay, drive around the concern. I said, how do you drive? Just get in, and he showed me where the gears were. So I ground around the concern. He gives me the license, you know. But one of the things about driving in Germany is if you got a big truck, you can drive. Because all they respect is being big. So I drove pretty okay. And then I got to New York City and I drove real well. Because that's the way you do New York. You just say, hey, and you pop your horn and just go. So it's funny how life teaches. I still have not taken a driving lesson in the United States. I don't even want to talk about it. Anyway, we talk about success, and we talk about my program, and one of them is one day at a time. The other one is keep it simple, and we all have heard of KISS, and that seems to apply for me. Keep it simple, stupid. You know, I'm so smart, I can't think my way through this program. I think the more intellectual you are, the harder it is to stay sober sometimes, because you never been to a meeting and somebody says, you know, on page 69, I can never remember anything about the pages. But I do know that if I stay sober one day at a time and I keep it simple, I can't get drunk. So there's a few other little things that they teach you, and that is stick with the winners. They told me not to hang around people with 5 years or more sobriety. So I looked around the room and I said, okay, that person. And that's the people I hung around with. I wasn't in AA to have fun. I was there to get sober. So I did everything that I could to do these things. And that's not to say I didn't have friends, but I didn't hang around with them. When I had a problem, I didn't go to those kind of people. I went to the people who had sobriety, because I figured they had been through something or something similar. I called my sponsor up one day and I had a problem, and he said, I don't know anything about that, but I know somebody who has. And he called him up, and the guy called me up, and I met him at a Horn and Hart. I don't know what a Horn and Hart is. You have to get your pie for glass thing, put your 35 cents in. But I think the last one has been demolished. My aunt, this lady who got me in, she used to cruise them. She used to tell me, she says, I'm going to go cruise the Horn and Hearted. She was a tough broad. And what's funny is that my father 12-stepped my aunt, his youngest sister. And my aunt now is sober 23 and a half years. My father came into AA 13 years ago, and he's been sober. So he just had to drink a few more years. I have another uncle, his younger brother, who just had his 22nd anniversary. I've got another brother who just celebrated 4 years, I think, 3.5, 4. And I have another brother, he's in jail now, but he's got 6 months, I think. He's the baby. He's only 35, 36. He's still working on it. It's funny how you get sober. You know, indirectly, it was my father who got me sober. And I never thought that guy ever gave me anything. You know? I had a lot of hatred for him. And it lasted for many years. One of the things that this program has given me, we talk about promises. This program has given me my father back. And he finally visited me here in the Great Midwest. I've been living here 10 years. So he comes to my house, and he and my brother Jimmy are traveling across country in a car. And he's leaving the house, and he puts his arm around me, and he says, "This is what you get when you don't drink." You know? This is a man who I didn't speak to for a year, and I lived in the same house with. To have his friendship probably is one of the most important things that have happened in AA. More important than the fact that I've been successful in business, that I've had a good life, is to have his love for me and my love for him restored. There's just no words to describe how good that is. Because I got up in a meeting when I was sober 4 years. I was in the village, and this beatnik, at that time he had a medallion and a goatee, and he had a turtleneck, I remember. And he made the state. I got up and I said, "I hate my father." And I don't know what we were talking about. And he said, "It was impossible for me to hate my father." And I said, "You haven't walked in my shoes." And then another guy got up and says, "He hated his father." And that was the first time that I even verbalized that I hated. But it takes that admission, just like being in AA and saying I'm an alcoholic, to begin to accept the hate and then somehow get over it. And it's interesting how similar problems are resolved through similar processes. It just took a long time for that one to go away. It took 10 years or more. But now, you know, I can call him up and talk to him. And despite the fact I still don't agree with 95% of what he says, that doesn't mean anything. The things that we do agree on are the important things. So it's kind of nice. And we talked about what is a success. That's a success. I wanted to talk a little bit about the process of staying sober. For 5 or 10 years I was in AA and going to meetings, and I had started meetings. I remember coming back from the Army, and went up to Binghamton, New York, which is a little industrial town in upstate New York. And I went to a meeting, and the guy says, "Hi, I'm Jim, and I'm an alcoholic." And he asked me if I was new, and I said, "No, I got sober and up here, and I was returning from the Army." And he says, "Oh," he says, "we got a young people's group here." You know, I was 25. All right. So I get to the meeting, and I'm looking around for the young people. They were all 35. I figured if I stayed sober for 5 years, they would have caught up, you know. So then, that was 72. 73, now I wasn't even sober 5 years. Shoot, I was sober 3 years. He says to me, I'm going to San Francisco this summer to the Young People's International. And this was 1973. And I was with my girlfriend in the back of a Volkswagen with a two-man tent, and I was going cross country. And I said, I'll meet you there. So I show up. Got my card. Again, I'm looking for the young people. And they weren't there. They were 35. That was the last conference I went to. Until today. Believe me. Left a bad taste in my mouth. One of the things is, I told you, I wasn't much for social AA. And that was social AA. Everyone was friendly, and I'm asking myself, well, what does this have to do with staying sober? You know, they were all, you know, they were all talking about this and that, and I was trying to keep it simple, so you can tell how screwed up I was. I had, you know, my other good story was that I had a chance to see Bill Wilson. He spoke every year in New York, and I was sober. 6 months, 7 months, something like that. And my aunt says, oh, Bill Wilson's going to speak. And I said, who cares? This is an anonymous program, you know. We keep it simple. We don't get into deities. She says, oh, you're going to regret it. One day you're going to regret it. I don't know if I regret it. I'm sure it was a good talk and everything, but I think it was just very typical about the way I felt. I felt that there really wasn't anyone that I had to look up to. That's not the way the program worked. That the person with one day sobriety was just as important as the person with 20 years. And that to look at somebody and get all gaga about was not my way of staying sober. Now that I'm over 20 years, though, I don't know. Maybe I'll change my tune. I don't know. I still think that the people with 6 months sobriety have a lot more to say than I do. I certainly relate more to them than other people with sober 20 years. Somewhere after 10 years, I started to isolate, and I'll tell you why. And I think a lot of people in AA go through this. In my case, it was a matter of, I had turned 30, and I would walk into a meeting, and everyone would look at me, and they'd try to figure out who I was, and then they would sort of like elect one person to walk over to me and say, hi, are you new? And then I would say, no, I'm new to this group, but I've been in AA a while. And he would run back and tell his friends, and then they wouldn't come and talk to me. And I don't know if anyone has gone through that, but after a while it gets old. In that case, I was different because I was young. But I've seen that happen to people for other reasons other than being young. I've been to uptown meetings in New York where if you weren't in the right social set, they didn't want to talk to you. You know, and I can go on and on. I'm sure we've all had our bad experiences with that kind of snobbery. Being different, to me, is a badge of honor these days. Because I think the fact is that I don't want to be like everybody else. I want to be like Jack. And there's a great pull in our society to be like everybody else. And the fact is, who wants to be like everybody else? I want to be like me. I don't want to live a safe life. I don't want to live a life where everything's taken care of. I want to live on the edge. And I don't know where your edge is. Everyone has a different edge to life. My edge used to be in the bars. It used to be that kind of life. I've got a different edge now. And I think it was real important for me to find out what that edge was. Because I tell you, I don't want to be bored through life. I didn't want to come into AA and be bored. I didn't want to find out that this was, you know, that I was right all along, that it was the drinking that was exciting, because it wasn't. I had to find out that life is exciting. I've had a few things happen to me in the last month that, you know, you talk about having everything planned. My plant closed. I work for Tasty Bread, and if you know the plant in North Kansas City, it's going to close. And about 200 people are going to lose their jobs. 4 days later, I was in an accident where my car got totaled. It was a good week. Today I woke up this morning and I went to work and ended up having to take my wife to the hospital. She just had surgery for a fractured foot. She fell off her horse last night. So I just came from the surgery. And I told her I was not going to give her any sympathy for a sports injury. For 20 years I've been hearing her shit. So don't make fun of anybody, because somebody will get you. They may have to wait 20 years, but she was dumping a ditch. You know, she had to be a big star. But no, she just had surgery. She'll be okay. She's more upset by the fact we can't go on vacation in Maine. See? That's where her head's at. She says, well, we won't be able to do that. Big deal. Fact is that, you know, she's okay. She didn't get her head bashed in. There's a lot of things that could have happened that was bad. So have her leg broken is just minor stuff. And you know, we go through life and, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? You know? We can spend a whole meeting on that. The fact is that's life. And one thing about AA is it teaches you is that you can stay sober through all of that. One of the things that I believe in as far as this program of recovery is that if I stay sober, I can do anything. Because having a platform of sobriety allows me to have choices. It allows me to have friends to help me. It allows me to do just about anything. And I'm saying I, but the fact is it's not I. This program works because of three things. One, that I'm honest. Second, that I'm open-minded. And third, that I'm willing to change. So if I have those three things, I think life would be pretty easy. Life is not easy. Life is a bitch. Life is a bitch. But the fact is, if you don't have fun, what are you doing? You know? I'm going to go through life having fun. I don't know about anybody else. The fact that I can't drink today is just a fact. If I pick up a drink, I'm a crazy man. So I've got to figure out some other way of having fun through life than drinking and doing drugs. So you all have a choice. Writing that down. So the last two. Living on the edge. Not being prepared is living on the edge. I want to talk about coming back to AA. For 10 years, I became successful. Successful in the sense of society. wear suits every day, make a lot of money, have a nice house, have all those nice things. I left AA because of not feeling like I fit in. And instead of being that young kid who's sort of an oddity when I first came to AA, I now became the guy who was 30 and had 10 years. And nobody knew how to talk to me. I didn't know how to talk to them. All the people that I wanted to talk to had a lot of sobriety. Again, I was not in AA for social reasons, so I never had any friends. The next 10 years were spent working 60 hours a week, on the road, pretty lonely years. You can stay sober without going to meetings if you just don't drink, but it's not much of a life. When I came back to AA, I heard a guy said that he had done the same thing and that he had felt guilty because he wasn't giving it away. And I thought about that for a while and I said, bullshit. He did what he had to do. He had to get away. If that's what it took to stay sober, then that's what he did. I'm not going to feel guilty for my life. One of the things that I've made a vow about is that I'm going to live my life without guilt as a motivating fear. And that's a tough one. Because I live my whole life on guilt. I'm going to live it on my terms. And that's a term of action. I'm no longer going to react to society. And I'm not going to let them tell me how to live my life. And if I want to be crazy, I think it's okay to be crazy. And I think it's okay to be different. Because those people don't have to live your life, but they sure as hell want to tell you how to live your life. You know, the thing that's going on in Wichita right now with the abortion thing is just about killing me. People have the audacity to tell other people that they have to live their life one way. It just makes me want to scream. And that's a personal opinion on my part. It's not an AA approved thought. I was attacked the other day about something similar. The Mustard Seed Group is one of the loosest groups in Kansas City. And we use the Hazleton One Day at a Time book, which I hate. And 2 weeks ago, the fellow who started the meeting was about, I don't know, it was about God and something. And he looks over at me and asks me to start, and I said, well, I hate this passage, and I don't think it has anything to do with, that God has anything to do with it, blah, blah, blah. So he calls on a guy who's got 23 years sobriety who has the exact opposite opinion right after me. He's looking for a fight. And old Joe, he says, well, I get on my knees in the morning, and he gives you the... Then it goes around, another guy says, I didn't know this was a meeting. He says, I never see a big book here. And he looked over at me, and he's upset with me, I guess. But, if you can stay sober, why does it have to be conference approved? That's what I don't understand. Even if I don't agree with it. If it helps somebody stay sober, it's okay. It's just like all the halfway houses and all the treatment centers, which I don't understand, and all the psychiatrists, which I don't understand. If it helps you stay sober, well, do it. It doesn't mean that I understand it, and it's not the way that I did it. But I have to allow the fact that other people need other things. And I think the one thing about AA is that it's big enough for everybody. And I'm glad it was big enough for me when I came to AA. Because I didn't want someone to say, well, you need to go out a few more years and practice a few more years because we don't think that you're old enough. Certainly, knowing the death rate of my friends in my neighborhood, I might not be alive today. And that's the way I look at it. That that I lived on the edge because of just the way I grew up. So, do you think rules are important? Well, I don't know. I've never heard of a rule in AA. Other than, there's one good rule. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And if we keep remembering that when the new person comes in, and keep reminding them, and it's their decision on whether or not they're an alcoholic or not, and they're carrying the message as being sober today and being the example of a person who is trying to live their life one day at a time successfully without a drink, there's more power in that than all the words that we can speak tonight. I doubt if anyone's going to get sober tonight over my talk. You know, really. First of all, if they understood what I said. I thought I wouldn't slur, but I don't know. I'm going to look through here. I don't know if I missed anything. Winners, just don't drink. These are the things that that I think were successful for me. One thing I've learned in AA is that what's successful for me may not be successful for you. So I ask that if you haven't identified tonight, there'll probably be someone later on in this conference that you will identify with. And if you're thinking about picking up a drink, just don't drink. Maybe you'll pick up a drink tomorrow. But if you don't drink tonight, you won't get drunk. And the fact is that by adding up those one days at a time, you know, you can have a nice life. It may not be sane. But then again, who wants sanity, right? And with that, I'm going to pass. Thank you very much.